Anyway, last week Jed took the class and he kind of did an overview of the book of Micah, which we are in the process of studying, and covered chapters 1 and 2, and I'd like to do just a little bit of overview on that, and then we'll move into chapters 3 and 4 a little bit tonight. There's only 7 chapters in this book, and so it's not very long. Next week, we'll be covering just chapter 5. And we'll see that this chapter 5 spends some time in Micah predicting the birth and the life of Christ coming on the scene, and also the church. So we'll be studying just that chapter alone next week, chapter 5. And then we'll pick up the following week, Lord willing, chapter 6 and 7, and we'll finish out the book of Micah. Primary message in the book of Micah is really Micah's strong condemnation of the social injustice and the corruption of Israel's leaders. But there's also a slim hint of and a promise of a future restoration and redemption for those who remain faithful, even though they might be carried off, and that's just what we'll find happen to the country of Israel. Micah in here points out not only how bad the powerful and the rich are, but also the importance of doing justice and practicing kindness, and most of all, just being humble to God. But Micah is very, very harsh in his criticism of Israel for their greed and their oppressing the poor, and especially their disregard for God. I'm sorry?
Ann said something. I don't know what she said.
Did you say something, Ann?
I heard her voice.
Yeah. Sure.
She might have been talking to the kids. But they come in with Bella and Liam. They are so cute.
But Micah points out, especially Israel's disregard for God's laws, and he keeps warning them about the impending judgment God is going to bring on the children of Israel. But despite those warnings that Micah gives, he does offer a message of hope, doesn't he? And he predicts a time in the future when God will restore a faithful remnant and bring justice to the world. Let's take a look at what we studied last week, just briefly. Do you remember the prophets that Micah was contemporary with?
Nope, not a clue.
Okay.
Is Jotham, Ahaz, Hezekiah?
I'm sorry?
Jotham, are you looking for the first verse? Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah?
Those are the kings.
No, those are the kings.
Oh, not the prophets.
Yeah, prophets. who did he prophesy with?
Isaiah.
There were some other prophets that were prophesying during those days. And okay, Isaiah was one of them. Yeah. We just got through studying him just a short time ago. Even though he lived and was born in Judah, he prophesied in Israel.
Obadiah?
No. Did you say something, Bob?
I said Hosea.
Hosea, that's right. And there was one other one, possibly. That was Amos. But I think he was earlier than Micah. So that Micah might have been right on the tail end of Amos's prophecies, and just briefly lived during that the end of Amos's prophecies. So or lived it, yeah, it lived towards the end of Amos's life. So we could probably include Amos in there. Do anybody know when Micah prophesied? What years?
735 to 700 BC.
Okay, well, that's pretty close, actually. It's about 740 is when he began his prophecies, and his down to about 698 BC. So it was 42 years or so that he prophesied during that period of time. Does anybody remember where Micah was from? Where he was born, where he came from?
Moresheth or something.
I'm sorry?
Moresheth or something.
Okay.
There was one with two names.
That was another name for the same city, yeah. Moresheth and / Gath. What do we know about Gath? Anybody remember?
I can tell you what this book says, not that I remember that, but it...
Who was from Gath, from ancient days?
Goliath?
Got hit with a stone in the forehead.
Somebody said Goliath.
Yeah, it was Goliath. It was Philistine city at one time. But that area had been conquered and was part of Judah. Yeah, Gath, but ancient city. How far was, do you know where it was located? Ted covered that last week too. Southwest of Jerusalem, away near Lachish. And we'll find out what happened to those cities a little bit later on. Okay, here's one for Eileen.
I don't seem to be answering.
Who were the kings? Who were the kings during Micah's prophecy?
Well, Kevin says it right here. The word of the Lord that came to Micah of Moresheth in the days of Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah, kings of Judah, which he saw concerning Samaria and Jerusalem.
All right. That is correct. Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah. And Micah covered all three of those times of kings in there. Anybody know how long those kings ruled? How about Ahaz? Or how about Jotham? Anybody know anything about Jotham? He ruled 16 years in Jerusalem. And was he a faithful king or was he evil?
No, he was good.
He was a good king. He did have some problems, though, didn't he? He didn't take down the high places. People still offered idol worship in the high places and built altars and that type of thing. But he did what was right in the eyes of the Lord. Do you remember anything about his father? He was actually a co-regent. He ruled at the same time as his father. His father's name was Uzziah. And he burnt incense in the temple when he wasn't supposed to because he was a Levite. And so he ended up with leprosy. And he lived outside the palace. He lived in a separate house because he was a leper up to the day that he passed away. And so Jotham began ruling when he was quite young. And he ruled 16 years. His son came up. Who was his son?
Ahaz.
Ahaz, yeah. How about Ahaz? Was he a faithful ruler?
No.
Wicked.
I'm sorry?
No, he was wicked. And his wife, I think, was even worse.
I don't remember his wife. Are you talking about Jezebel?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, sir.
Yeah. No, this is Ahaz, not Ahab. This is Ahaz. Ahab was a ruler in Israel. Ahaz is the ruler in Judah, and he was about 300 or 180 degrees from what his father was. He did everything, even sent his kids and burned them in sacrifice. Closed up the temple. Did as much as he possibly could to irritate the Lord, and he certainly did that. He didn't have any peace during his 16 years that he reigned. He had troubles constantly with the adjoining nations. Always, even Israel invaded him, took some of his cities. But he had a lot of problems. Okay, that was the middle of Micah's time. Who do we have next as a king?
Hezekiah.
Yeah. Now, is he the one that did right, or did he do bad?
No, he was good.
A little bit of each.
I'm sorry?
A little bit of each.
Yeah, but, Hezekiah had his tough moments. That's exactly true. And I think one of the things we might mention a little bit later tonight is maybe what was an instigator of Jerusalem's downfall, or Judah's downfall, may have been the seed that Hezekiah planted. But Hezekiah reigned 29 years in Jerusalem. And he did exactly the opposite of what his father did, Ahaz. He opened up the temple that Ahaz had closed up. He broke down all the idol places of worship, all the high places. He opened up the temple and sent invitations to everybody. After he told the Levites to cleanse the temple. And once he did that, he was opened the temple up for worship and sent messengers out to all the surrounding tribes, inviting them to come and worship in Jerusalem. And they set up the Passover feast and invited everybody to come. Did everybody show up? What was their response to the messengers?
No one showed up.
Well, there were some people that came. Some people came even across in Ephraim and half tribe of Manasseh on the other side of the river came. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, that's what I was going to say. You had Asher, Manasseh, and Zebulun.
Yeah,
they were the only few tribes that came.
Yeah, they had little dribbles of people coming in from the other tribes, but most of the messengers were ridiculed, weren't they? And made fun of. But some of them did come, and I think this was a remnant that's going to eventually come back to Jerusalem in the future, because it's not going to be long before they're gone. And we'll see that pops up also a little bit later. I think that the time of Jotham and Ahaz is when Micah did most of his prophesying against Judah. Remember, he mentions Judah and he prophesies about the sins that some of the leaders in Judah did. And I think that during the time of Jotham, even though he was trying to be good, trying to do the best he could, he still had a lot of problems in dealing with the people of Judah. But Ahaz was really the frosting on the cake. And I think that during his reign is when the rich and powerful people in Judah really got bad. And they had, they just had no way, and nobody wanted to stop them. And I think this was the time of Micah's, his prophecies against Judah, rather than the time of during the time of Hezekiah. But I got ahead of myself here, so let me catch up. Yeah, most of the time, Micah spent condemning the rich and powerful people of Israel. And during that period of time, the last period of time for Israel, there were four invasions by the Assyrians. And eventually, in 722, and this is during the time of Micah, during the time of Isaiah, during the time of Amos, in 722, Israel ceased to exist as a nation. They were carried off to Assyria, and other people were brought in to... Usually what would happen is an army would come in and they would conquer a land, and to avoid any uprisings at a later date, they would take all of the educated people, all the powerful people, basically they would leave in the land. When they left was the serfs, and these people were farmers and tillers of the soil and shepherds and this type of thing. They were down kind of low on the totem pole, and they were capable of organizing rebellion. And then what they would do is they would take these people and place them in other countries that they had conquered, and bring those people and put them into the land of Israel. And what do we have? We have the Samaritans, don't we? That's where the Samaritans start. So we know that the Samaritans were around for a long time. And of course, they were highly respected people by the Jews, weren't they? No. But you know, the Assyrians were especially cruel. They were just some of the vilest people around. And, you know, we study this in the book of Hosea. They would come into an area in a city, conquer the city. They would slash open pregnant women. They took babies and dashed them up against the walls and killed them. And they not only did this in Israel and the surrounding, but they also did it in surrounding countries. So they had no mercy. They went in and slaughtered people without any feelings. They just went in and cleaned house. Micah saw all this. He had warned them, didn't he? He warned them about what was going to happen to them. And they just ignored him. You think they believed him after this happened? I'm not sure. I think they got the message. But it was a little bit too late when they were already gone. In Micah 1 verse 5, Micah refers to Jacob's sin. What did he mean by that?
Isn't that Jacob and his brother and the birthright?
Well, the answer is in verse 6 and 7. You want to read that?
Yeah. All right. So Micah 1, 6 and 7.
Uh-huh.
For I will make Samaria a heap of ruins in the open country, planting places for a vineyard. I will pour her stones down into the valley and will lay bare her foundations. All of her idols will be smashed, and all of her earnings will be burned with fire, and all of her images I will make desolate, for she collected them from a harlot's earnings, and to the earnings of a harlot they will return.
Yeah. Jacob's sin that is referred to here is Israel. That was Jacob's name. It was changed to Israel. So when Micah refers to Jacob's sin, he's talking about Samaria, isn't he? What do we know? What's Samaria? That's the capital of Israel, isn't it? And so when he says Jacob, Israel was Jacob, and it was because of their sins, Samaria. He also says that Jacob was Jerusalem, which refers to Judah. So he refers to Judah's sins as well, and what they're doing. Micah, when he's out there going to, when he enters Israel, he says, I'll moan and I'll cry. I'll go barefoot and I'll go naked without any clothes on. I'll cry loudly like wild dogs and like ostriches. Now these people, there were hundreds of prophets throughout the land. Hundreds of them. Not all of them were righteous, not all of them were faithful, but there were lots of prophets. And so when you had a prophet running around in the land crying, walking around, who do we know that wore animal skins, ate locusts and wild honey?
John the Baptist.
Well, yeah, him too. But there were other guys. Elijah, that wore skins and ate bugs and things like that. But, you know, so it was not a rare thing, I don't think, to see somebody like this going around bare, well, maybe naked. He probably had some clothes on, but he was barefoot and without clothes. And he's going around and he's crying, howling like dogs. I'm sure that people ridiculed him and made fun of him. But anyway, can you imagine somebody doing that today here?
Well, we've had street visitors in the past.
I don't think they were prophets, so.
No.
Well, maybe they were. I don't know. But, yeah.
And all the prophets you're talking about weren't from God. I mean, Micah was from God.
Well, some of them actually, God prophesied through some of them that, you know, and, I mean, we don't have a record of that, but not all of them not all of them were unfaithful, you know, gave false prophecies, and there were false prophets. They were called false prophets that were in the land. And these writers of these books mentioned a lot of false prophets, and that people would succumb to them. And that would be an interesting sight, to see somebody running around howling like wild animals, that type of thing. They'd probably grab him and throw him in an insane asylum or something like that.
They'd make media influencers out of him nowadays. They have their own podcast.
Yeah.
Yes, I remember one time we were driving on the freeway down around Eureka, California. I'm just a kid. There were four of us in the back seat, mom and dad up front. we were driving around, and Mom made us duck down so we couldn't see because there was a wild woman without any clothes on running down the median in the freeway, and about five cops chasing her. And she was from the state hospital there, so, and had gotten out, and Mom made us duck down. It's kind of funny. But, you know, you can imagine Micah going around like that back in those days, and it would be indescribable if we saw something like that today. But chapter 1, Micah, is describing the destruction of Israel and most of Judah. I find what's interesting is that he says the destruction of Judah will come as far as the gates of Jerusalem. Does anyone know what he's referring to there? When he says that the destruction of the Assyrians are coming, they're going to destruct Israel, and they're going to come as far as the gates of Jerusalem. Would anybody like to read 2 Kings, chapter 19, 32 through 37? 2 Kings 19, 32 through 37.
Therefore, this is what the Lord says concerning the king of Assyria. He will not enter this city or shoot an arrow here. He will not come before it with shield or build a siege ramp against it. By the way that he came, he will return. He will not enter this city, declares the Lord. I will defend this city and save it, for my sake and for the sake of David, my servant. That night the angel of the Lord went out and put to death 185,000 men in the Assyrian camp. When the people got up the next morning, they were all dead bodies. So Sennacherib, king of Assyria, broke camp and withdrew. He returned to Nineveh and stayed there. One day, while he was worshiping in the temple of his god Nisroch, his sons Adramelech and Sharezer cut him down with the sword, and they escaped to the land of Esareth. And Eshederon, his son, succeeded him as king.
Okay. So it tells us what happened when Micah says that the Assyrian army is going to come to the gates of Jerusalem. But that's as far as he got. And he didn't even shoot an arrow there. And when you talk about that story, this is Sennacherib, who was the Assyrian king at the time, and while he was in Lachish, and he was doing battle there in Lachish, and it was kind of interesting because, to me at least, that they went in there and they were doing archaeological work there because Lachish was built on a mound. And they were doing some archaeological work down below the ruins of the city. And they found arrows, arrowheads, that type of thing, which were Assyrian. So it dated back to the time of Sennacherib's attack and his destruction of Lachish. Not too far from Lachish is the city of Moreseth Gath. That's Micah's home. It got destroyed as well. And all the surrounding cities during that period of time. This was 701 BC. So this was the time of Micah. And he was very active there. So I think he was very, very sad for the people of Israel and Judah. He foresaw the destruction. because of sinfulness or unlawfulness before the Lord was going to call it. So he saw that. Then in chapter 2 of Micah, he exposes some of their evil ideas that they had. They lay awake at night devising evil plans and then carried them out during the next day. They have power, so they cheat people. If they want a field, they just take it. If they want a house, they just take it. Because they're rich and powerful and they can do this. People coming by visiting through the country, if they saw somebody visiting, they liked the coat that he had, they took it. They were powerful and they paid off the judges. They had the judges in their pockets. Kind of like, what am I thinking of? Godfather. He had all the judges in his pocket. That's what happened back in those days. They paid the judges off so they knew that they could get away with what they wanted. This all stemmed from the palace, from the leaders of the country. You know, you look back on all of the kids that kings usually produce, they were bunches. Of course, they had a bunch of wives, they had a bunch of concubines. And they produce kids on a regular basis. Well, I can't remember the name of the guy who became king, and I've forgotten his name. He killed all of his brothers, 70 of them, because he wanted to eliminate any competition. I've forgotten where that's at and who it was, but it's in the Book of Kings. But he killed 70. So that was not uncommon for the leaders like this to produce a lot of children. And that's probably what is going on here in Israel. All these people are part of the royalty, and they have free reign to do whatever they want. They have the power to buy the judges off. They even corrupted the prophets and paid the prophets with a meal or a glass of wine, maybe a house to live in, and paid off the prophets so the prophets would prophesy good things. So God's turning his back on the people, and he tells them to leave. Get out of this land. It's not yours anymore. And you're not my people. So he's telling these people in Israel, you're not my people anymore. Your sins have come before me, and I'm not going to put up with it anymore. And, of course, God never shuts the door, does he, completely? Always leaves an escape hatch somewhere. And God does it for these people as well. Leaves a door open for them, so that if they ever want to come back, and eventually we'll see down the road where some of these people came back from Babylon, came back to Jerusalem, but it's a long ways down the road. And Micah talks a little bit about that. In chapter 3, does Micah accuse the heads, the leaders of Israel and Judah of doing? Somebody read chapter 3, verse 1 through 5.
And I said, hear now, heads of Jacob and rulers of the house of Israel, is it not for you to know justice, you who hate good and love evil, who tear off their skin from them and their flesh from their bones? Who eat the flesh of my people, strip off their skin from them, break their bones, and chop them up as for the pot, and as meat in a kettle.
What about the prophets? Michael warns them that when prophets don't speak the truth, the people of God can expect leaders to pervert the truth and pervert justice and shed blood. And, of course, this is exactly what happened. Somebody read chapter 3, verse 6 through 12.
Therefore, it will be night for you without vision and darkness for you without divination. The sun will go down on the prophets, and the day will become dark over them, and the seers will be ashamed, and the diviners will be embarrassed. Indeed, they will all cover their mouths, because there is no answer from God. On the other hand, I am filled with power, with the Spirit of the Lord, and with justice and courage to make known to Jacob his rebellious act, even to Israel his sin. Now hear this, heads of the house of Jacob and rulers of the house of Israel, who abhor justice and twist everything that is straight, who build Zion with bloodshed and Jerusalem with violent injustice. Her leaders pronounce judgment for a bride, her priests instruct for a price, and her prophets divine for money. Yet they lean on the Lord, saying, "Is not the Lord in our midst? Calamity will not come upon us." Therefore, on account of you, Zion will be plowed as a field. Jerusalem will become a heap of ruins, and the mountain of the temple will become high places of a forest.
What's going to happen to Jerusalem? It's going to be a pile of rocks. Yeah. Anybody know when this is going to happen? When will Jerusalem be destroyed? Now, Micah is foretelling this. And there's somebody else that foretells this as well, and that's Isaiah. And but does anybody know who's going to destroy Jerusalem?
The Romans in 70 AD.
I'm sorry?
The Romans in 70 AD.
Okay, well, they that's true.
Was it
this has happened? This was a destruction before then, yeah.
Wasn't it Babylonian?
Yeah,
Babylonians.
Remember a guy named Nebuchadnezzar in 586. So this is about 150 years later. And about 150 years after Hezekiah. But it was told during the time of Hezekiah. Does anybody remember about Hezekiah and what he did? This was a little, when we first started tonight, I mentioned there was a little seed that Hezekiah planted, and it's going to come to fruition. Yeah, Pedro.
Wasn't that, didn't Hezekiah, that was the Assyrians. He tried to pay off the Assyrians.
Yeah. Hezekiah.
He showed all of his treasures.
Yeah. Hezekiah was faithful. Hezekiah was blessed by the Lord. He had all kinds of stuff. He became very, very wealthy. But he got sick, didn't he? And Isaiah told him, "Get your house in order." And so Hezekiah went into his chambers and he cried about dying. And God said, "I heard your tears, and I'm going to extend your life 15 years. So God, Hezekiah was pretty happy. I guess anybody would be if they knew they were going to have an additional 15 years without any trouble. And so Hezekiah was really happy about that. Well, anyway, the Babylonians heard that Hezekiah had been sick. And they were at peace, but they sent ambassadors to Hezekiah to check on him. And Hezekiah, as Bob mentioned, Hezekiah showed him everything that he had, all of his treasures, all of his riches, all of his wealth. And anyway, Isaiah came to Hezekiah and said, what did you show him? Hezekiah said, I showed him everything. And I was really proud of this, boy, I showed him everything. Well, that was a downfall that, eventual downfall of Jerusalem and Judah, when they ceased to exist. This is about 150 years later, but the Babylonians never forgot that. And Nebuchadnezzar came and got it. And I remember, his wife always wore the bun in the back of the head.
Emerson Flannery's wife.
I'm sorry?
Jesse
Flannery, yeah. Emerson preached for us. And Emerson was relating this story. And he said, yeah, Isaiah asked Hezekiah what he did. And Hezekiah said, oh, I didn't hold anything back. I showed him everything. And Isaiah said, well, because you did that, they're going to come and take it. And Emerson said, and you know, they came back 150 years and they got it all. I never forgot that. That was pretty interesting and pretty funny. But anyway, they did. They came back 150 years later and they got everything, destroyed Jerusalem, destroyed Judah, and it ceased to be a nation from then on. In chapter 4, we find Micah talking about and foretelling the coming of the Lord. In the last days, he says. And in those days, God will recover those who've been hurt, that he will make a strong nation of those who were sent away. Micah explains there why they are going to Babylon, but that they will return. Now we know that there were a lot of people who were faithful that went to Babylon, didn't they? Those not only in Judah, but also in Israel, or Israel as well. Who do we know that well-known people that we know were hauled off to Babylon? How about Daniel, Ezekiel? A lot of those people who were faithful people got hauled off in the crowd as well and were put in Babylon. And many of them never came back. We don't have any record of Ezekiel or Daniel ever returning to Judah. But we do have someone that does return. Who's that? Anybody remember? Micah is saying that they are going to return. How about Nehemiah? Remember Nehemiah? Zerubbabel? They were sent back by the Persian king. Babylon is gone now. The Medes and the Persian came in and defeated them. And they're ruling the world at this particular time. And they sent people back to Jerusalem to build Jerusalem and rebuild the temple. And remember, that was 5th century BC, that was Persia. And of course, we know a lot about the Persian stuff with Esther and Xerxes and Artaxerxes and those people who were in control back in those days. Okay, next week we'll look at chapter 5 and we'll study that alone. That's Micah's foretelling of Christ's coming and also the establishment of the church. And hopefully everybody will stay well. Hopefully we'll see you Saturday.